podcast talking all things health technology and NHS IT. Welcome to Digital Health Unplugged. Hello and welcome to Digital Health Unplugged in what is the third episode in our podcast series for our Digital Health Network's members. I'm your host, Jordan Soloff, news reporter at Digital Health. Developing the next generation of NHS CIOs is our focus for this one. The Chief Information Officer or Chief Digital Officer is a critical role for all NHS organisations trying to harness digital and data technologies to improve performance and improve patient safety and outcomes. But NHS CIO roles continue to lack a clear path or even an agreed kind of common set of competencies. So today we're going to explore kind of what is needed to become an effective health CIO, ask where the next generation of NHS CIOs are coming from, and discuss kind of how we can support the development of a diverse range of future digital leaders. So joining me to discuss all of that, we have two great guests. I'm going to let them introduce themselves. So could you tell listeners who you are and a little bit about what you do? Starting with you, please, Abigail.
Hi, thank you. Yeah, hi, everyone. I'm Abigail Harrison. I'm the Chief Digital and Infrastructure Officer for Lancashire and South Cumbria NHS Foundation Trust. So that essentially means I have executive responsibility as a CIO for digital on the board and also responsibility for estates, which is interesting and lots of overlap from a technology point of view. I'm quite new. I've been here 6 months. And before that, I was the CIO at Northwest Ambulance Service for the last 4 years. That's me.
Great. Adam?
Hello, everyone. I'm Adam Ansell. I'm the Digital Innovation Programme Manager for Greater Manchester Mental Health NHS Foundation Trust. Brand new role for me, really. Only just been in it for about 5 months, basically setting up a new innovation function within the digital team at Greater Manchester. Prior to that, I've done work in kind of EPR development, software development for the Christie NHS Foundation Trust.
Great, thanks both for being on the podcast. I'd like to kind of start by concentrating on skill set. What kind of key competencies and skills are essential for a successful NHS CIO, particularly kind of navigating the complexities of health tech and data management? If I could come to the CIO pro first, Abigail.
Oh God, I think I'm still new. I don't think we can call me a pro. Well, it's interesting. So I've got quite a different background. So everybody might not agree with me, and I've probably got a different take on it, but I've worked in the NHS kind of 20 years, largely in innovation and improvement before I came into that CIO job at MWAS. So 5 years in that digital space. I think for me, what I see is that, you know, the issue is not technology, is it? So absolutely, we need technology experts in our midst. We need people who really understand data. But we also need people who understand how to collaborate, how to kind of navigate through complexity. So it's a different kind of skill set, I think, is kind of equally important, or it's important that we have a range of different CIOs who have different ways of thinking about things. So, you know, negotiating, it's a little bit of a battle trying to drive change in the context that we're working in. So it's people who can really operate around that. And I also think just a mindset of I talk a lot about being more parent, you know, that real kind of drive for change. We're not going to give in. We're not going to let things kind of stop us. So there's something about a kind of willpower that's needed, because I think it's all too often in the context that we're working in for it just to be able to stop us. There's so many reasons and things that slow us down. So yeah, I think there's absolutely people need to be excited about technology. It's great to have people that do have that background and that understand technology. But I think almost more important actually is the ability to set a vision, collaborate with people, you know, drive change through complexity. I don't know what you think, Adam.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with absolutely everything you said, obviously. The only kind of thing I probably would answer differently, given that I'm not a CIO and you are, I think looking at this from a point of view of working with CIOs, and I think the good CIOs that I've worked with, unfortunately quite a few of them, is that their ability to kind of listen to the people below them, of which I am one of them. And even if, like you said, it may not be a technical background and everyone's got different technical backgrounds, I might not be working in a space that CIO is familiar with, but the ability for them to kind of trust what I'm doing or give me the right guardrails to do what I'm doing And trust me, that I can achieve with that support is probably quite fundamental, I think, to being successful.
I love that. That's great. And you're absolutely right. And I would often say, I used to say it in maths actually all the time, my job is just really carefully listening to what everyone is saying around me and then kind of picking out from that what the highest risks are, what support people really need, like you say, where you need to let go and just let people fly because they've got it and they love it and they're going to do it and they're fine, but where you need to step in and provide a bit more oversight and support. So it's really just about listening to everyone. And you're right, I think, you know, my CTO, Richard Dunham, what she used to say, no one's an expert in everything anyway. So this whole debate about like how technical do you have to be? Well, he would say, he was our CTO, but he would say he wasn't an expert in loads of stuff that the team were doing, and he would always look to those people in the team. So yeah, that's great.
Exactly.
Good insight.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously we know that the landscape of health tech, it's evolving constantly, it doesn't kind of stand still. How do you kind of envision the role of an NHS CIO changing and evolving in the next kind of decade, and what kind of new challenges and opportunities could spring up?
I think this probably follows on from the point I've just made, to be fair, and I think that is actually moving. I think traditionally CIOs are just people that have moved through the organization that they've worked in and potentially have come from really technical backgrounds and moved in through the ranks into a CIO role. Potentially, is there a shift that, I don't know, CIOs are coming more from a natural leadership role that tend to have worked in digital. The future, like you said, the landscape is going to change. I think it's going to be much more fast paced. That's already happening. And actually CIOs probably need to be able to cope with that a lot more than they do actually just the technical knowledge. They need to be able to cope with that change and probably support the teams that they have. Obviously, like I said, I'm not a CIO, I'm in that team, and I need to be supported by my CIO in that massive change. And I think from my point of view, I'm working in an innovation space, and Abigail, obviously you've come from an innovation space, and actually having a CIO that can really foster that fast culture and that fast change actually benefits an innovation. So there's probably a bit of a selfish plug for me to have a CIO like that, really.
Yeah, totally agree. And actually, interestingly, so my last job, that my job title was, I was a CIO, but I also had an explicit remit around innovation. Mm-hmm. And I think that's certainly something that it seems we're both really agreed on, Adam. And I think that will start to be a change. So I think what we're seeing, even nationally, you've got this alignment now in terms of digital and transformation and improvement. That's certainly something that I've worked on in the last 5 years. How do we start to work together? Because actually, if we're not doing transformation, you know, what are we doing? And most transformation and improvement requires digital to deliver that. So it's really starting to kind of blend all those worlds together a bit more, I think, and have a leader that can kind of speak all those different languages. So you need to be able to absolutely speak to that really super technical expert in your team who really understands your infrastructure. It's really going to keep you safe, but you also need to be able to go and talk to some people about improvement. I think, you know, building on what you said, Adam, I really think the future is going to be more and more about kind of co-design with service users, patients, staff. So again, you know, that's a different world from you know, what we might have had as a traditional kind of IT world, being able to do that kind of work. I talk a lot about a kind of methodologically driven approach, which I don't think we do enough. So I want people who really understand, you don't have to be an expert in it, but you want to have that kind of drive. Let's do this in an agile way. Let's use improvement methodology. There are things out there that help us get around some of the barriers. I also think for me, some of the opportunities and kind of different ways of thinking about things will be around partnerships. So with industry, with academia, I'm really passionate about that. And I think sometimes culturally, we're a little bit skeptical with industry. You know, we don't see ourselves as a bit afraid of one another, or, you know, but actually we're all struggling with the same things. And I really don't think we will meet the challenges that we face without proper kind of co-design and really good partnership working with industry all around that kind of co-design with patients and with staff. So I think that's going to be a big shift, and that has to be the way that we move. And I think all the conversations about productivity and digital and all these things that have come out recently, well, you know, we're only going to do that through really good process improvement before we digitize. So I think that alignment is going to be really key, and that will be a focus. I think the other thing just to say before we move on is there's something about data and leadership around kind of data and insight, I think, coming to the fore more. So I think traditionally we might have had people who are from a kind of IT route, which would still be great. And I think the main thing for me is we want lots of different types of CIOs to work together. So it's not to say that's not still required, because it absolutely is, you know. But I think we will start to see more understanding of the importance of kind of leadership in terms of data and the opportunity that brings us.
I think within the NHS, it's quite handy for hospitals to start seeing their IT teams as digital teams that create all of this. So they might build their EPR, and they, like you said, there's that co-design element to creating the EPR. The digital team kind of needs to stop being seen as just that little technical service that exists that makes sure your computer turns on and makes sure it's fast enough for you to do it. There's actually so much more to that exists within digital. Like you said, there's data teams, there is the EPR team, there's an infrastructure team that makes sure you've got the right networks. All of that exists, and all of it needs to kind of be promoted and kind of acknowledged by the wider trusts. And even as far as the nurses on the wards need to see what digital can do for them. And it's quite a lot, actually.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. talking about the future, obviously, it kind of ties into career pathways, and there isn't really a clear pathway at the moment for NHS CIOs. What kind of strategies or initiatives do you think are necessary to not only attract these kind of top talent, but also retain them, make sure they don't kind of lead the NHS?
It's a really difficult one, isn't it? So
I
don't really know what the answer is. And part of me thinks, because I think sometimes we're afraid of people leaving and going to, you know, moving on to industry. And we all know we could get paid loads more money if we did that. So that's like always hanging over everyone's head, isn't it? In your digital team, you're like, please don't leave and go and work for that company and earn twice as much money. And I think what that should, the fact that anyone is in any of our teams shows us that there are a lot of people that just really care about making a difference and feel really passionate about the opportunity to really get close and really make a difference to people's lives and communities. And I think so that is our fundamental kind of, you know, selling point, isn't it? Like, this is why
the NHS, isn't it?
It's why you work for the NHS. Yeah, and not just in digital teams. It's the same for anyone in nursing, you know, any other part of the NHS. People are here because they want to make a difference and they feel really connected to that sense of purpose. So I think, you know, that's, you know, almost all we've got. So, you know, we've got to make the most of that opportunity. But I also think, going back to my kind of maybe some people wouldn't agree in terms of my real strong feeling around how we partner with industry, but maybe we shouldn't be afraid for people to leave and come back and move around, you know. So I think there's probably a sense that you don't have to like start in the NHS at the age of 19 and, like you said, Adam, work in one organization all the way off. And I know people move around a lot now, but I still think we have a sense that like you have to be in the NHS, and we're all looking at the CVs to see how long they've worked in the NHS for. I think we need to be open about that and accept that people are going to move around. You know, I think there are things that would help, aren't there? And, you know, we've talked a lot in the past nationally about getting Agenda for Change right and all that kind of stuff for technology roles. But to be honest, that the industry outside of the NHS probably moves so fast that we'll probably never keep up with that. I mean, there's no harm trying, but I don't know what you think, Adam.
I mean, for me, there's two reasons people leave the NHS. One is for more money. They go elsewhere for specifically more technical roles. They leave the NHS and go into industry and earn sometimes double the amount. The other side is just absolute lack of opportunity would be a reason someone leaves. Mm. And I think that would be a way for me to see that career path to CIO is actually just making sure people have got the opportunities to develop along that path and make their way to CIO if that's really where they want to go. You said earlier there's never a right background for a CIO, and I don't think there's ever going to be a linear career path to a CIO, because that would just be pointless. The kind of the success of things like the Digital Health Advisory Panel are based on the fact that all the CIOs have different backgrounds and different viewpoints, and that's kind of why it's helpful. So to have one linear path is not going to support that. Obviously the finances we can do nothing about, but lack of opportunity is definitely something that CIOs can do to help people up that career path. There's always things going on. I think there was a webinar, on continuing professional development that Imperial College did quite recently, and that was really good. They've really fostered an amazing kind of culture of development for their teams and opportunities for their teams to develop. Stuff like that is the things that's in our power to help people on that career path.
It's the training, isn't it? Definitely. I think if you can, I always say, like, it's the basics, but if people have a really good appraisal, really good objectives, a really good personal development plan, and we're investing in that training, then we can keep people and that they see that path. And I think the work of the Digital Health Network is really important in just raising profiles of different types of people and showing people what the future could look like. I also think I was reflecting then what you're saying, Adam, about that lack of opportunity. And I think sometimes, yes, it's lack of opportunity to progress, but it's also lack of opportunity to deliver sometimes. So I know quite a lot of really amazing people that I've worked with in the digital space who get so frustrated sometimes with the pace of change and the bureaucracy, that is what drives them to leave as well. And I think that's probably a little bit more in our gift.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things we're looking at in the panel, is around kind of some priorities around innovation and research, and how do we make it easier to deliver change quickly? You know, how can we work with procurement rules? What can we do nationally to support people so that people don't get so frustrated that they either give up or they leave and they go and work to a sector that they perceive to be kind of faster paced, or, you know, it's easier. I think there's a lot of frustration actually probably in digital teams around trying to drive change and it not being an easy context to do it in.
Yeah, I suppose it's giving an opportunity to prove yourself rather than an opportunity to deliver or to progress or to get promotion. It's just opportunity to prove what you can do.
Yeah.
In any way.
Yeah, definitely.
Great things said there. I mean, and ultimately when it comes to attracting and retaining people in NHS, you're never going to be able to completely stop people leaving. Everyone's got their own career and everyone does what's best for them. So, but, you know, I think, you know, there's some good support out there already. It's probably better than it was a few years ago. Some good mentorship programs, and as you mentioned, the networks. So definitely some support for people starting their careers, but maybe some more can be done for kind of sculpt that clearer pathway, I suppose. That kind of leads on to the next question about how the kind of industry of healthcare can better support the development of diverse kind of pools of future digital leaders, kind of ensuring that there's different backgrounds represented and different perspectives. How can the industry kind of do more to support that diverseness?
Shall I start, Adam? I feel like I often get on a bit of a soapbox about this because I can see these problems we've got in terms of diversity. And I think there's two things that really stick out for me. So one is, we are getting more female leadership now, CIOs, but often that's coming almost from the side, a bit like me. So it's people who've established themselves as a leader and then are moving across to digital, rather than, I still think we have a problem with women being perceived as less technical and women struggling to move as quickly through the ranks in technical teams. So I think we can fool ourselves through the number of women we're seeing as CIOs that problem's gone away. And I don't think it has, from very recent experience with women that I work with in the technical teams. So I think that has got to change. So we want to see technical women, you know, coming into the field, working their way up, getting through the ranks. And then almost like in an opposite way, I see a lot of diversity in the digital teams in terms of ethnicity. And people from Black, Asian, minority ethnic groups in working, but they're not represented in the leadership.
Mm-hmm.
So there seems to be some kind of barrier or something that is stopping from people then being represented in the leadership. And it's really clear to see, if you go on that national CIO call, you can see that's not right compared to, you know, when you go out and about and meet with your teams. So there is something that we've got to do. I think it's really hard to think of kind of concrete actions, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Like what do you do in a really concrete way? You know, obviously there's the softer stuff. So my approach has always been just to talk to people. So I will ask people in my teams, you know, how are you doing? Have you gone for any jobs in the team? I've been known to ask, you know, do you think you're suffering any kind of prejudice? Because we all know we have unconscious bias. You know, people recruit people like themselves. So there's definitely something about recruitment processes really being built to avoid those unconscious biases. So we've got to be really, really open about that, I think. I think in terms of women, you know, again, some of my teams used to come to me and they'd be like, right, we've heard you. We're trying to get some women into this team, but no one's applying for the job. Or, you know, what can we do? And we used to try and think, what can we do to get more women applying for the jobs? And I think the most concrete thing we came up with was around flexible working. Because, you know, I came in to my master's as a CIO working 4 days a week because I had a one-year-old son. And blooming heck, I was shaking when I asked for that flexible working. I was really nervous. And actually, I'd known the woman I was working for years. And it was a really hard thing to ask for. And I came in to women in my team, in the leadership team, who'd been trying to get flexible working on for years and been told no. So, you know, there's something about flexible working, I think, because women make choices often. Not all women want children, and a lot of men take on care and responsibilities, but I do think still largely as women, and you make a lot of choices in your career based on the fact that you know you might be having kids and where are you going to be. And so I think there's a real opportunity for us to just talk about that more, and again kind of hardwire that in to kind of digital leadership roles.
I think that talking is the key point though, because when I read this question, there's a quote that popped in my head around like the process you use to get to the future is the future that you'll get. So in fact, you just sat there and said, oh, we're sat there trying, how can we get women into these groups, or how can we get these people into these groups? And you say that BAME is massively underrepresented in leadership, which it is, but actually who's sat around the table asking the questions of how do we get these, I don't know, whatever population, we're underrepresented population we want to have a look at, who's asking those questions, and are they in that room when we're asking those questions? So it's okay, a bunch of white men sitting around and asking how do we get BAME representation in here, why are we not just asking representations from that population to say what is it you need, how can we support you? I think just the question needs to be in the right place to make sure we've got that diverse group. It's easier just to ask the people around you, and at the minute the people around you are the people that pretty much look like you in some cases, and that's it. So it's I think it's just being open to the change, really. Everything's changed around us, particularly digital technology has changed, the methodologies we've used have changed, all of that stuff, and we just need to be open to that and start asking different groups of people what it is we can do, rather than trying to come up with ideas of what we can do to help them.
Yeah, it's a really good point. I thought that as well, like, we're not really the ones to answer that question, are we? And exactly, I'll often say, like, I do feel equipped to give a perspective on women, because you know, we need to just understand, you know, what people's experiences are, and understand what it is. But it does make me, I feel a kind of healthy sense of outrage about it, and I think that's good. I think we should be generating a bit of a sense of that, you know, because that's how all kind of social movements start. So I think we need to be talking about it. We need to be calling it out, and we need to not be afraid to use the wrong language. Or, you know, that's all my learning around this is, let's just, if we see something that we don't think is right in terms of equality and diversity and inclusion, let's just try and talk about it. And I think that will help. But I think there are some concrete things in terms of recruitment, flexible working, things like that, that may help us reach a more diverse group of people.
And sometimes I call out the fact that the diversity isn't there.
Well,
let's not escape the fact that us three are sat here as white people, and we can call that, we can talk about diversity all we want. Yeah, but we are three white people sat here. It's not always going to be a diverse group of people, but just call it out when it's not, and that's okay, and have a chat about that, and not be shy to have those conversations is probably a good step forward.
Yeah. And it's trying to, you know, there is a lot of training you can do. Some of the training I've done around unconscious bias has been so, like, helpful for me, just to really understand where my own perspective might be skewed, or some of the things that will be naturally happening in terms of choices that we make that we can challenge. So totally agree with you. Just need to be open about it.
Yeah,
absolutely. Thanks. Some great points there. Coming towards the end then, kind of in both your experiences, what are some kind of key approaches or programs for kind of mentoring and kind of helping develop the emerging young leaders in health tech, and specifically kind of aiming them or preparing them for becoming a CIO in the future? What kind of things stand out for you in terms of that support?
Why don't you start this one, Adam? You should start this. Are you doing anything good, Adam? Is anything helping you?
Absolutely amazing things all the time. I think for me,
not generally in terms of training.
One absolute standout thing for me, and it's probably the reason I'm here now, and actually I was cohort one of what was 35 under 35, and is now kind of just a future digital leaders cohort. They're about to start cohort three, I think, next month, potentially. I think it's April. So that for me is probably one of the biggest standout things I've done so far in my career. Just it wasn't just a CIO thing. There was people from nursing backgrounds, people from AHP backgrounds, pharmacy backgrounds, medical backgrounds, all there. It wasn't a CIO focused thing, and it still isn't a CIO focused thing. But actually, I think that helped a little bit. We could sit and have a chat as future CIOs, as future CNIOs, and as future CCIOs about these things. And actually, if you reflect on that, we are the future senior leadership teams of digital in the NHS, not just the future CIOs. So it's great. And the stuff that's come out of that has been immense, like this podcast, for instance. We've done things at Rewired, we've done things at Summer School. I think the key take out of that is just the network that we built has actually been the most valuable point to get as part of that kind of, I guess that's an approach, an effective approach to getting that. And again, from that, is there's more going on. So I'm doing some mentorship with Dawn Greaves, who's part of the advisory panel for CIOs. So there's me and a group of us that are doing that group membership, group mentoring. And even from that, I've started having chats with people within my mentor group about different aspects of our work and how we can support each other, different trusts. Like I've said, I'm in an innovation team in Greater Manchester. I've been having chats with a trust down in London about what potentially the plans they've got for an innovation team and what we're getting up to, and how they could probably reflect that. Most of that kind of relies on, I guess, applications and being successful and accepted into those things, though. But there's plenty of other stuff that you could do for free and easy, and you could do it every day. And it's just stuff like Rewired and stuff like Summer School. Yeah, you need to pay for Summer School, but things like Rewired or HET, just go and have a chat. I think one of my biggest learning things quite early on was the fact that it's not weird to talk to someone at a conference. To go up and introduce yourself to someone at a conference is weird until you realize it's not weird. Everyone just does it, and it's quite the norm. Just go and say hello and go and learn from people and go and have a chat with people.
It's like speed dating or something, though, isn't it? It's so awkward. You all stood around the stands.
Yeah, it's the most awkward thing in the world until you realize that everyone's just as awkward as you, and it's absolutely fine.
Yeah,
it's basically, that's it.
I love that. You're just getting yourself out there. I totally agree. Some of the best advice I've had is like, don't. In fact, I've had it recently. I've got a new job and I think, oh, let's get my head down, you know, focus on my new job. It's really important. I don't want to be seen to be just doing stuff that isn't entirely focused on delivering my job. Yeah. And actually, it was our medical director said to me, you know, you've got to find somewhere where you're getting your energy kind of externally. You've got to, you know, speak to people that have the same interests as you, you know, get, because that's what gives you your energy anyway to do your day-to-day work. And like I just said before, I firmly believe that when people have a really clear sense of not exactly what the next job is or not exactly where they're going, but a sense of a future and a sense of opportunity and development, you get more from people anyway. So let's you know, be clear that like it's all right to take the time to join a network, you know, to go to a conference, too, because that does, I think we get more from people when they're getting that kind of energy. So I think the networks are really helpful. I mean, in terms of kind of specific, you talked about the Digital Health Network. I think there's some good big training programs now around digital, but I think the benefit of those is probably the networks that you gain through joining those.
Yep.
I think I'm hoping to learn more soon about the Shuri Network, who are doing some specific stuff around kind of minority groups. So I think that apparently is been really successful in terms of people developing the skills and moving into leadership roles that might have been finding it difficult to do so or coming from some of those underrepresented groups. So I think there's loads out there, and the key is just to get out there, you know, if you want to get on Twitter and LinkedIn and all that, there's loads of people talking about stuff. It's also not weird just to message someone on LinkedIn as much as you like talk to them, although I do ignore a lot of my LinkedIn messages as well, so don't be offended if anyone messages me. But yeah, it's just trying to put yourself out there. But I would say as well, like, don't put yourself under pressure, because I think there's a lot of pressure to, oh, I must be doing a training course and developing myself as a leader and doing a blog and tweeting and going to a conference and building my profile and actually, you know, all of that stuff, I don't think, you know, I've done some of that stuff and I do some of that stuff, but I don't think it's really the things that have helped me progress. I think we put ourselves under a lot of pressure to be seen and to be visible. I think it's more about just having some good relationships, finding some good people to have good relationships with who are going to help you and give you good perspective. And I've had that, you know, I always say to people, get a mentor. So Kate Warriner, when I was coming off, I'll give her a shout out. She was my kind of CIO mentor as I was kind of coming up through the ranks, as it were. So get a mentor, get a coach, find some people that you want to chat to, but don't put too much pressure on yourself.
I agree. Yeah, you use mm-hmm. social media to get those networks rather than make the social media network.
Yeah.
I think sometimes it's a bit underestimated, really, the value of just talking to people. I think we can learn a lot from each other, can't we?
Definitely.
Well, we've reached the end of the episode. That was a quick half an hour, but it's a sign of a good episode when the time flies.
Is that a good sign? Are we like not as insightful as all the other people?
No.
Insightful, but guess.
Exactly, yeah. Thank you very much to Abigail and Adam for joining me and speaking so well on this latest edition of Unplugged for our Networks members. Thanks everyone else for listening. We'll be back soon with another episode in this series, as well as other episodes too. Bye for now. Thank you for listening to Digital Health Unplugged. We hope you enjoyed this episode. For more, follow us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or your favourite podcast platform. And to find out about our latest news and events, head to our website, digitalhealth.net.